I have
Right.
a very hilarious story that I just want to share with you first. Is that okay?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just that, like, precisely when I thought you were going to call, I got a call from a, like, restricted number, and I answered, and I was like, hello! And it was somebody, like, fundraising for, you know, the DNC. And they were like, that's the most excited anybody has ever been to answer. And I was like, I was expecting another call. I'm sorry. And they were like, well, can I just have a few minutes of your time? And I was like, not right now.
Actually,
anyway,
no.
I just,
that's really funny.
Yeah, yeah, nope, sorry, please. Please call me later. I'll probably give you money. But, yeah, just later. Just later, thanks. Anyway, it was mostly them being like, that is the most enthusiastically anybody has ever answered the phone. And like, I hope that if in that one way, I made their day slightly better. But anyway.
Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Hell Yeah Homeland podcast. This is Gail. I'm joined today by Sarah. And we are welcoming Ellen Adair, who has played Janet Bain, affectionately known to us as Fucking Janet, chief of staff to Senator Paley this season on Homeland. Sarah and I are really excited to talk to her about her character, what it was like to act on Homeland this season, get a sense for her thoughts on Janet's arc, and wrap up by talking about her past and future projects. So thank you so much for joining us today. We've loved watching Janet stir the pot this season.
Hey, it's really my pleasure.
First things first, how did you get involved with the show?
So I auditioned for it. It was the really lovely human being, Kim Graham at Judy Henderson Casting, who brought me in. And I guess the only sort of anecdote here is that I was originally brought in for Dr. Meyer, the part that Sakina Jaffrey played.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's so crazy. Sorry, I'm just like surprised about that because she's the complete opposite of Janet, like in every way. That's so interesting that you were brought in to play that part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I actually, like, I hadn't been in for the show before. I didn't really know Judy Henderson's office that much. So I remember I had a really fun time working on the sides and, you know, went in and had a good time in the room. And then I got the appointment for Janet instead, and or also later. And when I came into the room, Kim told me, oh, you know, they really liked you, and so they wanted to see you read this part also. And, you know, it's funny because the original audition was like just actually the tiniest chunk of that first scene that Janet has with Carrie in the kitchen. And it was like five lines or something like that. It's sort of funny that the audition for Janet ended up being like so brief, given what she ended up getting to do. But I think that it was partly that they were like, oh, we've already seen her read three pages of, you know, of the Dr. Meyer sides. And so mm-hmm. we have a sense of like who she is as an actor. But, you know, a really fun thing that a couple of the writers told me was that, you know, they didn't necessarily have a sense of Janet having as large of a role in the whole season as she did, but that they just sort of were picking up what I was throwing down, I guess, to use the metaphor, when I first came on set. And they were like, oh, like, let's see if we can use her more. So it was really like an actor's dream come true.
That's awesome. Yeah, because you played so well off of, I thought, like, instantly your scene, the introductory scene with Claire Danes, was you guys had chemistry off the bat. I actually felt like you had known each other for many years, and that's how she got the in with Paley. I didn't realize that it was a setup call from the general until, you know, Janet's character says that you know, many episodes later. So I could totally see where they picked that up, especially your chemistry with Paley and how annoyed you looked when he's like annoyed with Carrie, and how you're like, you're in agreement with him on that. It was crazy.
It was just amazing. But no, those were actors that I, like, you know, I essentially met for the first time when I was on set with them. So
how was that working with Dylan Baker then? How did you like working with him?
It was incredible. So the reason that I kind of hedged and then like tapered off the end of my sentence there at the end was because I've like really admired Dylan specifically. Like, he's been one of my favorite actors for years and years. And our first day on set together, he was like, "You look kind of familiar to me." And I was like, "Oh God, okay, so here's what it is." In like, I don't know, 2012, I like accosted him in the Times Square train station because I had just seen him in God of Carnage on Broadway, which I was like so actually weirdly nerdily excited that I hadn't seen the original cast, but I saw the cast with him and Janet McTeer because those are two of like my big heroes. Ironically, Elizabeth Mervell is another one of my big heroes. So anyway, I had told him at that time, like, you know, I'm sorry to be bothering you, but, you know, I'm just like such a fan of your work. And every time you show up on a television show, I'm like, this shit just got so much better because Dylan Baker classes up everything that he does. And he was so kind to me. He's really like the nicest person alive. It's one of those things where like I think he plays sort of like weird, creepy people so well because he's actually the nicest person in the world. So he was very nice to me then, and I told him that on the first day, and he was just kind of like, "Huh." And then it was 2 days later that he was like, "Oh no, actually, I recognize you because I saw you on Billions." So it's so funny that like. because I like, you know, worship him so much that I just assumed that like he could never know who I am as an actor. So yeah, that's my comical first day on the set with Dylan Baker story.
Yeah, that's really funny actually. But how do you go from the mindset of just like revering this actor and sort of seeing him as like a larger than life figure to like acting alongside him? I like that's got to be like a pretty big mental shift. Like, were you really nervous about it, or did you kind of just like approach it head on? What was that like?
I guess I just feel more excited about it, you know what I mean? Rather than like nervous or scared about it, it's like, oh, I get to play with these incredible actors.
Yeah.
You know, that like I get to step up to the plate with Claire Danes is incredible. And that I just know that working with actors like the two of them, they're so excellent that there's almost no option but to just like be excellent in response to them, if that yeah. makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like it really wasn't scary to me. It was just exciting. And, you know, and also I felt like, oh, this is like, I'm ready to play this game.
I think that's why you're an actor and I'm not an actor, because I would have been like terrified. But you, yeah, I guess you're right. You kind of just do have to rise to the occasion, and you know, they're so amazing. And I don't know, I thought that you were really great the entire season. What I really loved about the character, and you kind of alluded to this in the beginning, is that, you know, you were brought on in the beginning and you kind of weren't sure necessarily what the role was going to be, and the writers kind of wrote something out in response to kind of how you were playing the part, which I think is, you know, just based on some of the other interviews that we've read, is kind of how a lot of the other actors on the show have kind of had to respond to that environment, which is, I mean, it's really different from being on like a movie where you know kind of the entire story from start to finish, or like in a play or something like that. You know, in the beginning of the season, Janet is someone we're kind of meant to trust. Like, we kind of want to be on her side because she's the one that's working with. Or I guess because at the beginning of the season, we're meant to distrust the president. And then over time, she kind of begins to undermine the entire mission. I'm assuming that you kind of weren't aware that was going to be the story for the character. Is that right?
No, I had no idea.
So
and like for me, that's the magic of television. Like, mm-hmm. that's, I mean, you know, it's it's a great blessing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, one great blessing is that, like, you know, you can show up on the first day and not know if you're going to be in another episode, and then you end up getting to be in five episodes. And so, like, yeah, that's obviously the greatest gift in the world. But additionally, I actually sort of love not knowing where my character is going to go. I know that other actors might feel differently. Obviously, you know, if it's a film, if it's a play, I have no option but to, like, know the whole film or the whole play at the same time. But, like, when we're living our lives as people, we don't know what's going to happen to us tomorrow. And we don't necessarily know what we're going to do in response to that. And, like, for me as an actor, I love to play other people as much like people as possible and as little like characters. And so, like, I'm glad that I didn't know at the start of the season what it was going to turn into. Like, that's what makes it really fun for me. That's what makes it more like life.
Right. I mean, because she wasn't like a mustache twirling villain. It's not like she had all of the pieces in play and, like, was plotting against everyone at every step of the way. Like, we even saw in episode 11, when she goes to meet Clint, she is not aware that Simone is alive. So, you know, she definitely wasn't sort of operating with all of the information at once too. So, yeah, that's interesting. I just, like, it sounds like you maybe weren't expecting her to have as big of a role in the story as she did. How did you sort of react to the shift in the story when she became, you know, someone who was, I guess, on, you know, one side to kind of having to be the person who is kind of undermining the entire thing? How'd you react to that?
Really awesome.
Like, when you saw it in the script, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's like the greatest question. I mean, I guess honestly, I felt kind of like, hell yeah, Homeland. So
I see what you did there. I'm here for it.
thanks guys. Yeah, no, it was really exciting. When I got like episode 11 and read it, like, I don't know if I like ran around the apartment in excitement, but like I feel like that's highly plausible that that's what I did. I was like, these scenes are so fun. And I mean, I guess the sort of like nerdy answer to your question is that, I mean, the show is just so impeccably written that characters, what characters want, what all these different characters want, really tracks. So, like, I didn't feel like it was, it's a sort of a reversal story-wise, but for Janet, it's not a reversal. Like, what I, as Janet, want the whole time is to unseat this president who I think is unfit to rule. And, you know, I also want the, like, political ascendancy of the, you know, of my boss and by extension me. Like, those are the things that I want. And so it's true that, like, it's just so fun that Janet goes to such extreme measures to make sure that happens. But that's it actually tracks. So, like, as an actor, it's just sort of my job to be the advocate for my character and to see, you know, okay, this is what the story is that we're telling in general, but also here's my point of view. And, like, Janet's point of view is really the same throughout the whole season, whether or not she ends up being, like, an ally to Carrie or an adversary.
It's almost like the enemy of the enemy is my friend, because she goes from, you know, being in cahoots with Carrie, who, and they both share that animosity towards Keane and what her administration is doing, to ultimately realizing that aligning herself with the Russians has its benefits too, in terms of taking Keane out of office and maybe cutting out the middleman there. And that's what's so interesting when we see her, you know, kind of she literally gets in the driver's seat, right, after she leaves Clint's mom's basement, which how hilarious were those scenes with Clint? Like, honestly, like, we were saying, we're like, what a little bitch he was. He rolled over instantly.
Yeah, I listened to the episode where you talked about that and was laughing. The scene was a little longer as like originally scripted. I mean, that's pretty much like always the way of it. So he
resists a little bit longer
in watching it. Rolls over a little faster than he did like when we were filming it. But like the story is still completely told and served. So yeah. Anyway, that was the only thing that I was like, oh, that's funny that you guys were kind of commenting on. Like, he just turned over so quickly.
Well, it was like, but yeah, Janet. 60 seconds into the visit, he was just like, here's exactly what's happening right now. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me, dude? Like, what's wrong with you? But I mean, I guess he is meant to be like 20 years old and he does live in his mom's basement.
Right.
He is in college and you are like, I'm going to send you to jail for like the rest of your life, which is so ironic because then Janet's the one who ends up like committing the crime and sort of running off to the Russian ambassador to say what's going on.
Well, and that scene in the car is so fascinating with you and Dylan Baker because you're literally in the driver's seat. You've kind of put the pieces together. You've contacted this ambassador, right? Janet has like figured out kind of how to fix this narrative from the useful idiot and utilizing that. And Dylan Baker's like 1,000-yard stare there at the end and how you see Janet kind of is like, all right, that means I'm going to do it then. That scene was so well played, I thought, between the two of you and his allegiance to the country.
Yeah, it was really fun to shoot that scene. And I, you know, in those moments, honestly, like what I did sort of from an acting standpoint was you actually thought more about like the real life president, mm-hmm. you know, and in terms of obviously like A, I'm not in politics, and like B, I wouldn't stoop to treason in order to get a president out of office. But in terms of being like, God, if there was something that I could do to get the president out of office, wouldn't I try to do that thing? You know, there's like, it was sort of, I mean, the parallels, or not even parallels, but the sort of like, you know, broken mirror of our own reality that Homeland is this season and last season, I feel like really helped feed me as an actor. And I feel like probably everybody, you know, all of the other actors felt the same way.
Well, and one of the things that I appreciate about Homeland this season, too, is I think we've had some criticism from people like in the community that Carrie had lost her agency for a while there leading into the season, and that we wanted to see, you know, her back in the driver's seat and driving the story. And what I really loved about this season was how strong all the writing was for the female characters and how all of them, I mean, from Janet to Sandy's character to Keen, Carrie, Maggie, all the women in the season seemed to really be taking control of their narratives and, you know, bringing those characters to life and showing how complex and strong they are within that story. And I thought, too, with Janet, with her story arc kind of culminating and, you know, driving Paley to this meeting, they succeeded with that, with her character, too, which is so interesting because it was, like you said, it was never set out to be that way. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, not as far as I know. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, that's one of the things that, like, makes me just love the show so much is how strong the female characters are, and that it is, like, yeah, you know, Senator Paley was gonna, I mean, from Janet's perspective, like, wimp out too much to do what has to be done, and so, like, she's willing to do it. I mean, you could spin that on a positive side and say like that he doesn't want to commit treason in order to get what he wants. And that, you know, Janet is like ambitious to a fault. Obviously in the last episode, she flips on him also. So like, she'll just kind of do whatever she can to survive. So like, that's not necessarily an admirable trait, but it certainly is a strong one. And to sort of represent, you know, like in a way from season one in this show, women being willing to do something that a man would not be willing to do, is so fun. And, you know, and I think that I was like very pleasantly surprised that, that people were responding to what I was doing in the first episode. But for me, it felt very much like, oh, I'm in terms of operating in the world of this show, I'm operating in a world in which, like, I'm trying to figure out how to put this the best way. Like, there need be no female apology for anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I can just go in and ask for what I want and say what I'm thinking. And I don't have to make it nice because I know that I'm living in this world, you know, that is dominated by Carrie's character and Elizabeth Keen's character. Like, really, you know, unapologetic, just powerful people. Like, not women, just strong people. And that was, I mean, that's the best thing to get to do. Like, it's the best gift. So,
yeah, that's
I'm
a really,
really grateful.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that, you know, because we're living in Carrie Matheson's world, you know, viewers are kind of conditioned to just expect that the women are just going to, like, sort of do whatever they want. So it's kind of that thing of like, don't ask for permission, just beg for forgiveness, which is kind of like the position that Janet's in at the end. And she kind of was a survivalist, you know. I think that scene in episode 11 with the senator where she goes to meet the Russian ambassador, and he's just looking ahead, he doesn't even like look at them meeting. My interpretation of that scene was he was kind of chickening out a little bit, like he didn't want to get his hands dirty, whereas she was like, God, fine, I guess, like, I, like, if that's what I have to do, then I'll do it. And, you know, she was always kind of in the mode of like, we have to save ourselves right now. She, like, it seemed like she was trying to justify it to herself that the end goal was to take out a president that was not fit for, you know, the office. But like, at the same time, I think she had that line where she was like, and, you know, like, if we come out all the better, then that's great for us too. So she was definitely, I think, an opportunist. And I think that, you know, the audience,
sorry,
has,
my dog is barking.
That's okay. I think that the audience has, you know, I don't know if endured is the right word, but the audience is definitely used to, you know, women not necessarily behaving badly, but just not behaving necessarily as society would expect them to. And, you know, she has this interesting sort of power dynamic with Senator Paley too, where she's both his chief of staff, so she's, you know, or he's essentially her boss, but at the same time, you know, she is the one kind of driving the show, and he does kind of look to her for advice and kind of what should we do, and she's the one who's kind of like, okay, we need to do this, and this, and he just kind of goes along with it in the end, and then she turns on him. So I just kind of loved her character, because I love when, like, the women get, like, one up on the men on the show. I just really enjoy watching that.
Yeah, I love her so much. She's like, you know, a sort of amoral human being in a way.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like I don't think, not evil, but just sort of like completely driven by, you know, survival and ambition and like, how can I spin anything? She's just sort of like the when we think of like politician in a bad way, that's Janet.
Well, like, the traits and the qualities that you're describing that, you know, she's ambitious and she'll do kind of whatever it takes is kind of like who Carrie is. They're just doing it in different spheres. So Janet's kind of doing it in the world of politics, whereas Carrie's doing it in kind of the world of intelligence and everything. But they're very similar, I think.
Minus the treason.
Well, minus the treason. I mean, but I do want to point out, I mean, not that I feel like in any way I deserve to compare Janet to Carrie, but like, you know, Carrie's broken a couple laws along the way also, you know, they do have a sort of similar, like, you know, fuck the rules mentality when it comes to it. And, you know, and to just sort of like, for me to remember, you know, that it is about, even if it is serving my own good, that like it is about like deeply held beliefs that Janet has as well, you know, about and I just feel like we see that in our world obviously today, where really the problem is because we just have people with sort of intractable beliefs on either side. And Janet is absolutely part of that, but that doesn't mean that it's not because of a belief rather than because, you know, she just enjoys screwing people over or something like that.
Well, you've been so interactive on social media too, talking about, you know, Janet Tude and fucking Janet, which has been so great because I think that interaction and playing off of like the audience's response and stuff, I think fed into, you know, the strength of the season as well. Like we just did the finale podcast this morning, Sarah and I, and we were talking about how they really stuck the landing in the finale, and just from the episode 1 through 12, just those threads really wove themselves through beautifully and delivered the story they were telling. And Janet was a part of that, I think, at, you know, showing the transition from the beginning to the end of her character. So in terms of Janet as a character and, empathizing with her, did you see her at the end as villainous, or did you see her as, like, when she ultimately flips on Paley, I guess, like, how did you feel about her arc and where it ended?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I guess that, you know, there's not a scene where we see her flip on Paley, obviously, but that was the thing that feels the most, in a way, traitorous of all the things that she does, given that, you know, throughout the season, I felt like as the senator's chief of staff, like my job is really to be his, like, bulldog and his guardian angel and his criminal mastermind, like all of those things rolled into one. And so to feel like, you know, that I was willing to flip on him at the end would like cause me a private pang. And that, you know, some of that could be just like by the end of the season, the rapport that I had with Dylan also, that I was like, oh no, how could I possibly do that? So yeah, I guess in a way it's like of all the things that felt the most traitorous to me, even though it was technically legal rather than technically illegal. But like I love and accept every part of her character, you know, so that's who she is, that she will, you know, in some ways, I guess it's kind of like in episode 9 and 11. And I swear I never really thought about it this way before, but like what we see is Janet being more skilled at political maneuvering than Paley is, mm-hmm. you know, which is not to say that he's any kind of like political, like nincompoop. I'm not calling you a useful idiot, Senator Paley, I promise. But just that, like, that that she's really like a political gymnast, you know, mm-hmm. that she can spin anything in any direction, and she can figure out how to like leverage anything. And so in that way, like, it's maybe not that surprising that at the end she's like, okay, well, I'm not going to go down with the ship just because, you know, just because you are. Right. Even if it's a ship that I steered into a rock, to overextend the metaphor. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what I was saying before. It's still the whole thing like tracks beautifully. Like, yeah, that's actually the person that we saw from episode one, is the person who would be like, okay, well, if they're going to arrest you, I'm just going to wriggle myself out of this, out of these manacles, you know. Yeah. She's a political magician, I guess.
I mean, it sort of became, you know, she stuck by Paley's side as long as it was like personally and, you know, career wise like useful for her to do so. And I think that, you know, it's kind of a cynical position, but I think that probably a lot of people watching the show is like, that's just how politics works, especially in the United States. Like, you know, as you were talking, like, her motivations do track, are just perception of them changes because we, you know, begin to know the full story. And so, you know, once we know kind of about what the Russians are doing, her behavior becomes, you know, less and less acceptable, I suppose, to the people watching. But
right,
like, it definitely does track the entire way in terms of what she wants to do. And like, I don't know, I think that it's a kind of shrewd commentary, I suppose, on like the political system. Like, this is maybe like what happens every day. It's like your motivations and your allegiances, it's kind of like every man's out for like
themselves
on their own. Yeah, like I mean, it's a dogfight, or, you know.
Yeah,
she understood that much more than Paley did, I think, you know, when we were recording the finale podcast earlier. You know, we were talking about the scene where Kane meets with Senator Paley, you know, after he's been arrested, and talking about how he's, mm-hmm. like, literally on his knees begging for her mercy, and she just spits in his face. And while it was cathartic, I think, maybe for the audience watching, you know, at the same time, I think it reveals kind of maybe what the difference between Paley's character and Janet's was, is that he was maybe a little bit more, not maybe a little bit, a lot more naive, I think, about kind of the work that they were doing. And Janet was always very clear-eyed about, like, we're doing this for these reasons, and, like, you have to get on the train because it's leaving now.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, I mean, I think something that was like so sweet in that scene was you know, the lines about how, like, you know, I was a dog catcher,
right,
initially, and, you know, like, I've spent my entire life in public service, and, you know, I felt like you could really see that, like, that also tracks in his character from, mm-hmm. from the beginning, that he's become this politician because he is the senior senator from Arizona and he's been doing this his whole life, but that there's something in him that's like about public service. And, you know, this is something that, like, I thought about a little bit, but and like Dylan and I talked about it, and it's not that important for the story, but I was like, I don't think Janet's from Arizona. You know what I mean? I think it's like he hired a lot of people. He just interviewed a lot of people for his chief of staff. And, you know, she's a complete bulldog. And so she was the person for the job. But I don't know that I'm like, I feel a responsibility to the citizens of Arizona, like, personally. Like, of course, I'm sure she would say that she does. But like, and yeah, I just sort of think of, you know, in a way, what that revealed about his character was that initially he was like, wanted to be a public servant in a way, you mm-hmm. know, and like maybe got just kind of over an entire lifetime of doing it, as you would, you know, obviously we see this too, just sort of like caught up in the politics of it. But I actually feel like the politics of it is Janet's motivator, you know, like
right.
That's actually what she's in for.
She understood the game and how the game worked. And,
yeah.
And maybe that's why she didn't
end
up being
her gambling table.
Yeah.
Kind of, and, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting because Paley's the one who ends up being the useful idiot. Janet is not a useful idiot. She's like kind
Janet
of,
is nobody's idiot.
Right. She's nobody's idiot. It's interesting. I mean, it's a very cynical position, but I think this show is actually it's pretty cynical, I would say, about kind of American politics overall. So.
Yeah, well, it's hard not to be these days,
that's,
you know?
That's also true.
Oh, my God. Preach. We were saying earlier, Sarah and I were talking about how different you look from Janet in real life. And you had been on Twitter posting these pictures of Janet Hare with your baseball t-shirts. And we were laughing because we were like, Janet has a very, like, 90s hairstyle, like, this beige coat. She's very conservative. She's, like, the opposite of, like, an Olivia Pope type, maybe has her cunningness and you know, the clever side of Olivia Pope, but maybe not as much as the white hat. So what were your first thoughts when you realized how they saw Janet and your hair and wardrobe when she came to life?
It's a gift. It's like an absolute gift. I love like hair and wardrobe because I'm like, oh, it's the greatest clue to like who they want you to be, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And like particularly it's so close to as like to any actor's body. It's like right there. It's a constant reminder of like I'm this person now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like, you know, I had a sort of like hair consult before I ever shot and like we're trying a few different things and I was just absolutely delighted, like, you know, the more that my hair was teased, like the more that it kind of like looked sort of like, I don't know, 1990s newscastery. I
yeah,
was like,
exactly.
Oh my God, yes. Mostly because like the part of that gift is that I know it's doing like the job of telling a story for me. So mm-hmm. I can just show up and just say things and listen to people and say things back to them. And my hair is going to be telling its own story, you know? So like, I don't have to act basically. Like my goal is always like no acting. So that's why, you know, my sort of like aphorism was like, Janet is the hair is Janet. Really like super in love with the work that the ladies on that show did on the hair. And by the end of the season also I was joking that like I was chief of staff to Janet's hair because like if it was like raining outside or like there was one day actually the day that we were shooting in the car scene with Dylan was very hot. And we couldn't have the AC on in the car because we were like wearing coats, of course, and everything, but we couldn't have the AC on because the noise and like Janet's hair kept falling just because of how hot it was in that car. And,
wait,
you know,
I
remember
you're
like
Janet's hair.
I mean,
like my
Janet's hair.
Hair.
it's Janet's hair. And so like, I like sprinted to, you know, in between like takes when they were sort of turning the cameras around on the trailer, I like sprinted to this van to like sit in the air conditioned van, like to try to take care of the hair because yeah, I was like, I'm chief of staff to the hair. Like I've got to protect the hair schedule. I have to, you know, make sure that nobody's asking too much time of the hair, that the hair is seen in the best possible light. So yeah, that was why one of the early, not maybe the first time that I shot, but the second or third time. Then when I like came out of the trailer and still had the Janet hair, but was wearing, you know, like a leather jacket and like a baseball hoodie. One of the set PAs was like, I love your hair with that baseball sweatshirt. And I was like, okay.
So were you,
that inspired the series.
Yeah. Were you surprised that that was kind of how they wanted to sort of physically sort of depict the character? Like, were you envisioning something else when you read the script, or were you just kind of not really sure what to expect?
I mean, I guess I wasn't surprised. I felt only delighted. So in that way, I guess maybe that's sort of what I was expecting. On the other hand, you know, the like really wonderful thing about working on a set is that it is collaboration. And so it is very much about like showing up and having your own ideas, but seeing what the other ideas that people have are. And, you know, that's why I like collaborative art so much, because I feel like everybody's ideas are sort of able to push everybody else's ideas to a higher place. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, I always show up the first day being like I just had a costume fitting for something else today. And I was like, oh, this is who I am. Like, that's so exciting, you know, that it's always just about like sort of accruing information so that we can tell the best possible story.
We had interviewed Maury Sterling during the season. We did a written interview with him, and we were asking him what it was like to shadow Leslie Linka Glatter during the finale that she directed. And he was talking about just how wonderful that experience was, but also how he loved Leslie's outlook of how the best idea wins. It doesn't necessarily matter whose idea it is. They just need to do what's best. And I think when you have someone at the helm who is willing to, you know, put egos or whatever that is aside and tell that best version of the story, I think you get to kind of unveil like the gems like Janet, or you get to see like that fluidity of the process. I think that ultimately makes the show better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what makes any, you know, like that's what makes any play better, or any, you know, any show. Anything, in my opinion. And I mean, that's also, however, that opinion is like what makes Leslie one of my favorite directors I've ever worked with. She's just the greatest. And it was so nice to be able to work with her twice on the first episode and on the last episode as well.
So, that's a nice bookend for her too.
Yeah. So it sounds like you were a fan of the show before the season. Like, did you watch regularly before you were cast?
Well, yes and no. So there's so much. It's like my job as an actor living in New York to watch all of the shows that are shooting in New York, even if it's just like if I like the show, then I'll like at least watch a full season. Mm-hmm. If I am like, oh, okay, I see what this show is doing, I don't know that I need to watch a lot, I make sure I watch at least like 3 episodes so that I know what the tone of the show is. Mm-hmm. But like, there's always so much to watch that I don't always like watch the entirety, like all a million seasons of a given show.
Right.
So when I went in for Homeland, at first I had only seen, like, I'm ashamed to admit, I had only seen the first season of it, but it was enough that I was like, okay, I know the world that I'm going into. And then when I got the job, I like went back and first watched season 6 just so that I would know like what was happening in the world, even though I was like, I know this is going to be giving me some spoilers. But then I like, over the course of the show, went back through and watched the rest of the show, just, you know, because it's an amazing, amazing show. And like, always intended to watch the rest of the show. You know, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to just watch season 1 and then like I'm done with this. It's just that there is sort of so much show watching homework to be doing at all times, that it's rare that I sort of like let myself just be like, okay, I'm going to watch, you know, only this show, all 7 seasons of it in a row, unless I'm like, yay, I get to do that because like, this is my job. So yeah, I've seen the whole show now.
That makes sense. But that's an interesting way to watch it, is to watch the first season, the most recent one, to be filming the one that's on right now, and then to go back and fill in the gaps. That's interesting.
Yeah,
probably better for the anxiety.
Right.
like, yeah, potentially, you know, definitely. I think that, you know, even just having seen season six, you know, which is, I was just, I didn't have a ton of time from when I was cast to when I was first filming. So I was mm-hmm. like, it's the most important that just that I know what's happening right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that like, Peter Quinn's death like means more to me in retrospect than it did at that time. I was like, oh, that's too bad.
Right. Cause you were like, who is this like random character? Cause he's not even in the first season. Right.
Yeah. No, he's not in the first season. And, I mean, I was pretty sure that he wasn't a random character because there's so many allusions to like all of the paths that they share. And I knew that like I was picking up in the middle of the story. But, yeah, so I did have some sort of like, a lot of spoilers, but actually, you know, it was sort of like very fun to then go back and watch and see like the way that the story unfolded. You know, and obviously like there were some spoilers that I had just because cultural osmosis, you know, like I knew that, Sergeant Brody was no longer alive because like I was working for him on Billions. So that kind of thing happened.
Does, this is kind of a random question, but I'm just curious, how do you approach watching a show that you're watching because you're like about to be on it versus a show that you're just watching like for pleasure? Like, how do you, I mean, do you like take notes or something, or is it just kind of more just like I need to kind of understand like what the mood and the tone of it is, like you said?
Yeah, it's definitely more the latter. I feel like tone is very important, and like what's the world of the show and who are these people, and like what's, and also like what's the way that the story unfolds. But that's not something that I like take notes on, because mm-hmm. it's more about absorbing what that world is so that I can be a part of it.
So my sort of follow-up question to that is, when you were watching the first season and then when you were watching season six, what were your sort of takeaways as to what the tone of the show is? I'm just really interested as someone who's been watching the show in like a very sort of serious and public way for a long time. I'm kind of interested, like, what did you think the tone of the show is and kind of what the world was when you were watching it for the first time?
Yeah. So, I mean, so season one I had watched just as part of my like standard, very enjoyable, but like actor homework, you know, like I didn't watch that in specifically in preparation for having that audition. I just watched it for being like, I know this is shooting in New York. It's my responsibility to watch everything that's shooting in New York. So, or everything that, you know, that casts out of New York. So, I went back and I might've even been like, I'm going to watch, you know, the first episode of season two or something, just to give myself a refresher on what the tone is before I went in for it. But I mean, a lot of it, it's hard to describe actually. But I mean, it's definitely, cause there's even a lot of sort of like gradations within, like, oh, this is just sort of like very realistic, grounded, naturalistic acting. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? That like, nevertheless, the tone of the show is slightly different for like House of Cards, even though like that's also kind of a political, not that Homeland's always been like political in quite the same way that it has in the last couple of seasons.
No, I know what you mean. It's more of
it's sort of like, and when these people make jokes, how do they make the jokes?
Or, right, the delivery.
Yeah. You know, no one's ever laughing at the end of like, a joke, right?
It's like, and it's so hard to describe, and so that's why like you just sort of have to watch it. But like even in terms of like New York police shows, the tone for Law and Order is different than it is for like Blue Bloods, for example, mm-hmm. Is different than Shades of Blue. You know, right. It's sort of like how dark is this world? How dangerous is this world? like,
what are the stakes and how do the stakes differentiate themselves?
Yeah, exactly.
And so sometimes that can be like pacing is also part of it. So I, you know, Homeland is a very fast paced show. I tend to feel very like drawn to fast paced shows. And I don't just mean like in terms of the storytelling or like, you know, whatever, car chases or like something like that. I mean, literally the way that people are talking, you know?
Right.
And so like fast paced shows tend to be, it's a lot of smart people. We have a lot of ideas. We're quickly picking up on what other people are saying and we already have something to say about it rather than like, oh, I'm going to need to think about that. but I, so I'm going to be working on another show soon and I don't know whether or not I'm allowed to say that I'm working on it. So I am not going to say the name of it, unfortunately. Like for example, I wasn't allowed to say that I was working on Homeland until it was airing.
Really?
That's kind of standard. So yeah, so I'm just going to accord this new show the same respect until I know whether or not I'm allowed to say that I'm working on it. But like the tone of the show is very different. And so when I was watching it, there's only been one season. When I was watching it in preparation for my audition, I was like, oh, there's a lot of space in this show. Like everything that everybody says is very full and there's like a lot of layers, but there's actually not a lot of like language on top of those layers. So there's a lot of space to kind of like, I don't know.
Give reaction and thought.
Yeah. There's just, things can take as long as they take in this world was like an observation for me in watching the show, which is also like just an incredible show. And, but like very, very different from Homeland, which is just very fast paced. That's the world that they're depicting.
Well, that brings up a good question because you've acted in Veep. And that show started out as a satire of the American government, when now has become, you know, scarily real. And now that you've just wrapped Homeland in this arc with Janet, Homeland is seemingly, you know, it's a documentary type in terms of it's very reflective of the world that we live in, you know, and the last two seasons, Homeland has been paralleling their world with our world in real life. So in terms of just those two shows, not knowing, you know, what you're working on now or whatever, but what's it like to act on these two shows that are fiction, but have, you know, these aspects that are mirroring our reality?
I mean, it's just wonderful. It's just the best. But I mean, I feel like anything that anybody is making is always going to be naturally fed by the whatever the environment is, you know, even if like, you know, we were shooting a show that was set in 1815, it would also be set in 2018 because all of the people who were working on it, like their brains and their bodies and their hearts are living in this time and are bringing what they have from this time to that. That said, like, I'm just kind of a political junkie. And so I really like political shows, you know, that's my kind of show. And so I feel like that just sort of is naturally works itself out in a way that like, I tend to work on the kinds of shows that I like, which is lucky, but also makes sense. You know, it's just, I like political shows because I'm a sort of a political person. And so it makes sense for me to be like a person in a political world, I guess.
It does, you know, and what's so crazy is I have CNN on the background on mute and I just saw you in a Liberty Mutual commercial. This is like surreal. That's surreal.
That's my robe. Yep. Yeah. It's kind of surreal. Like when I'm at the gym, this happened to me yesterday. I looked up and there was me. And like the people on either side of me and, you know, on the elliptical machines, where I was just like, that's me.
And you're like,
I mean, I didn't say it. I didn't say it, but I just thought the hilarity of
that's an actor's really, assistant. Really funny.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Hilarious. So you said that you're currently like working on a show that you can't talk about, so we won't ask you about that. But are there any other sort of projects that you have that you can talk about, like in the future?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, one other thing that I can say about this show is like, it's not a political show and I'm not playing a Republican. I'm not even playing any kind of a suit person. So like, that's really exciting for me.
I'm like trying to figure out what it is. It's like a show that films in New York that's only been on in a season. And I'm like trying to figure out what it could be.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I just want to be
that's okay. No.
And smart. Yeah.
We won't ask any questions about it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you guys someday, I promise. So yeah, I'm also working on an independent film that's going to be shooting this month as well, called Sins of the Sun. It's really good. I love the script. I'm super excited about it. And I'm playing a therapist, so I'm playing a suit person, but that's my wheelhouse, so I'm fine with that. And I'm also working on writing a series myself.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. What's like,
yeah.
What's Let's it about?
It's about sports writers.
Okay.
Surprise, surprise.
I'm totally into that. Yes. I'm a baseball fiend. I'm a Cubs fan. I have to be honest.
Cool. Love the Cubs.
Which normally people who like the Red Sox, I guess we have a little bit of a shared camaraderie, it seems, between the fan bases.
Right, because you're a Red
Sox.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm baseball polyamorous, basically, is what I call it. I like a lot of teams. The Phillies are my life partner. I'm from Philadelphia originally, and so it's always Phillies first. But I lived in Boston for 7 years, so I... and was raised on a fundamentalist hatred of the Yankees, and so
yes.
I was
who wasn't?
Oh, okay,
right. Who wasn't?
I mean, a lot of Yankees fans for some reason. I don't know. They didn't get the memo. So like my best friend in college, you know, we became sort of Red Sox fans together, but she's also a Cubs fan, and so it's a little easier when you're like, oh, I have my National League team and my American League team, but I just like a lot of teams at this point, so
that's okay. That probably means that, you know, you're more likely than not to have like a better outcome than if you're just rooting for one team, especially if that team is
true.
The Phillies, right? I mean, like the Phillies aren't. I'm not like a super baseball fan, but I know
the Phillies
like some
have had their glory days. The Phillies. Oh, have been,
okay, all right. Then maybe I'm just behind the times a little bit.
The '80s, the Phillies in the '80s were they like ruined my life as a Cubs fan quite a bit. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'm
the Phillies.
Sorry. I was very very small at that time, but yeah, had something to do with the creation of my fandom probably.
Yeah, I
but yeah, the Phillies, I mean, they won the series in 2008 and then went and lost to the hated Yankees in 2009, and then sort of like from there on just every year got a little bit farther and farther from glory, and they've kind of
that probably
been
means that they're due for like
years.
A comeback then. I mean, because that was like 10 years ago. I feel like all these
they've
like it kind of comes in cycles,
yeah, they've
right?
Got a lot
like
of
the team's
young
really good
now.
And then they're like really bad for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, they were rebuilding. Now they have a lot of exciting young players like Rhys Hoskins.
All right. Well, I'm going to say thank you to Ellen Adair for joining us on the special edition podcast of Hell Yeah Homeland. And keep us posted on what you're doing in the future. And hope to see you in more things.
Yeah, thank you. This has been so great. This has been amazing.
It's been really fun. Yeah!